Let's go. Welcome, everybody, to the Senate Committee on Business and Transportation. For the record, it is May 8th, 2017. We're going to start off first with opening a public hearing on House Bill 2562A. Patrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2562A requires a lender for a reverse mortgage to send annual notices to borrower and any escrow agent, title insurance company, or other paying property taxes from escrow. I have a pretty lengthy summary that's available on OLIS, Mr. Chair, so I will just summarize by saying it has no fiscal or revenue impact. There's no amendments, and it came out of the House 59-0.
Must be controversial.
We shot down bills here. It was 60-0 votes. So.
After all, it did come out of the House.
Yeah, that's true.
Welcome, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, very much. Good afternoon to you and the rest of your committee. For the record, I'm State Representative Brad Witt, House District 31, appearing before you this afternoon in favor of House Bill 2562A. This is a bill directed at notification of folks who have reverse mortgages on an annualized basis that they still have to pay property taxes. And it has become increasingly prevalent that a number of folks feel that when they enter into a reverse mortgage that they have, in essence, a cash cow, that the money flows in only one direction. And I think that's where they are mentally, including the fact that they forget that they have to pay property taxes still. And we've seen increasing numbers of instances where folks have gone tax delinquent with reverse mortgages because they simply forget the fact that they're still responsible for that. The bill requires a 60-day advance notice to the borrower. It seems like a strange term, but to the borrower and or his or her agent in the instances where perhaps escrow, title insurance, or possibly some other agent is actually the responsible party for paying the taxes. The notice still goes out 60 days in advance. And hopefully we can abate property tax delinquency for holders of reverse mortgages. With that, be happy to try and answer any questions you might have. And appreciate the opportunity for the consideration of the bill.
Good catch. I would have thought that the reverse mortgage holder would have had the property taxes. Apparently some others did, too. Senator.
Yeah, the question I have is a senior deferral of property taxes. If they entered into that before they went into a reverse, how does that work?
Spray issue.
I am not exactly sure on that specific instance, actually, Mr. Chairman, Senator Girard. As far as I know, the deferral would continue as normal, and if there's whatever taxes are owed by whom, either the individual property owner or an agent. Then, as the bill prescribes, then it would be the agent that would, in essence, be writing the check.
This must have been a tough one. C engrossed?
Oh.
They did a lot of work in the House. Any other questions, Representative? Thank you, Representative.
Thank you all very, very much. Appreciate the opportunity.
I don't have anybody signed up. Does anybody else want to comment on House Bill 2562A? Seeing none, we will close public hearing. We'll open a work session on House Bill 2562A. Mr. Vice Chair?
Mr. Chairman, I move House Bill 2148 to the floor with a due pass.
It's the wrong bill.
2562.
Why did you jump around? Confusing me. Okay, this time I'll move House Bill 2562A to the floor with a due pass.
Senator Thompson's moved House Bill 2562A to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion on the motion.
Okay.
Is there any opposition to the motion? Senate Bill 2562A is moved to the Senate floor, but they do pass recommendation, and the chair will carry it. So we'll close on that. We will open on House Bill 2140A. Patrick.
Yes, sir. Mr. Chair, House Bill 2140A adds seismic information to the list of required disclosures that a seller must provide to purchasers of real property. The measure has minimal fiscal impact, no revenue impact. There are no amendments, Mr. Chair, and the bill came over from the House with a vote of 58-1.
Oh, Representative, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Thompson. And Senator Girard, can I see this? Senator Riley and Senator Monroe?
She must want this bill.
Well, you almost just moved it.
She's being awful nice.
This is a really, really good bill. This was actually at the request of the super smart people next to me here, who will answer all the technical questions you may have. It provides information to prospective home buyers about whether a home is bolted to this foundation and raises awareness about the risk of earthquakes. And it's consistent with our effort to make Oregon more resilient. And it's actually supported by OSPAC, the Oregon Seismic Safety Policy Advisory Committee, which I was on for 9 years, and then I had to go off, or 8 years, then I had to go off, and now I'm back on it. So I'm very happy to continue the work implementing our resilience plan that from 2013. And what really makes it even good for all of you, both D's and R's, is I co-carried this on the floor with Representative Post. So it's truly bicameral, bipartisan, and I hope that you will consider it.
That's a long form. Sure. Who's next?
Dan. Chair Beyer, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Dan Eisenbeiss with the City of Portland. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of House Bill 2140A. Chair Beyer, as you noted, this is a long bill, but the operative part of the bill is on page 8. It's really rather simple. The bill is so long because it's reprinting the seller's disclosure statement for residential real estate in its entirety. On page 8, there is a proposed addition of a two-part question. One, was the house constructed before 1974? That date is significant because it's the year that the first statewide building code was adopted in Oregon, which ensured that newly constructed homes throughout the state are bolted to their foundation. And if yes, has the house been bolted to its foundation? Like any other question in the seller's disclosure statement, the seller could answer yes, no, or unknown. I'll let Carmen Merlo from the Portland Bureau of Emergency Management talk a little bit about the background and impetus for this bill. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Chair Beyer, members of the committee, I'm Carmen Merlo, the director of the Portland Bureau of Emergency Management. We know that Oregon's at risk from both the Cascadia subduction zone as well as local crustal faults. And unlike other hazards, earthquakes are not something that we want to evacuate from. In fact, quite the opposite. We want to keep people safely in their home. And that's because one of the big lessons from Katrina is that when people are displaced from their homes, from their neighborhoods, from their communities, the chances of them coming back are small, and that slows down the city's economic and social recovery. So our goal is to keep people safely in their homes. In Portland, about 70% of our single-family residential homes were built prior to 1974, which tells us a very large percentage may not be safe to occupy. So homes that aren't bolted down can shake off the foundation and shear utilities, making the home uninhabitable. This is a small measure, but we think will add raise a great awareness about the home's viability, and we encourage your support of it and happy to answer any questions you may have.
Senator?
So do we have any idea how much it costs to bolt a house to the foundation?
Chair Beyer, Senator Riley, a typical home it could cost anywhere from $3,000 to $8,000. Now that's a typical home. I will give you my example. I live in Northeast Portland, a 1906 home. It had a brick foundation. Mine cost $25,000.
You had to have a new foundation,
right? That is not typical.
Senator.
Yeah, I just want to make it clear, and I know the answer, but the only two things you're asking for is, was it built before 1974, and if it's bolted to the foundation. I don't have to disclose if I have a house over at the beach that it might fall into the ocean.
Chair Beyer, Senator Girard, that's absolutely correct.
Everybody should know that.
Anybody else? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Senator Monroe.
Let the record show that in 1974, I wasn't here yet.
Oh, my.
I'll give him another mortuary bill.
All right. Thomas Dyke.
Oh, that's right. They
and Sean Cleef.
I had a guess with me. I wasn't paying attention.
Chair Beyer and committee members, thank you for allowing me to testify in favor of HB 2140 on behalf of the Portland City Club. I'm a retired professor of chemistry from the University of Oregon, now living in Portland, and I was a member of a research committee of the City
Club. Could you put your name on the record, please?
Oh, I'm sorry. My name is Thomas Dyke, for the record. I was a member of a 14-person research committee of the City Club of Portland, whose charge was to study the earthquake resilience of the Portland metro area and to make practical recommendations to improve that resilience. And one of our report was voted by an overwhelming 98% favorable margin, and one of the recommendations was that the legislature should require a seismic disclosure statement at the point of sale for single-family homes. And so that's exactly the point of HB 2140, and so the City Club is in favor of that. This research committee talked with over 80 experts in the area of earthquake resilience, scientists, public officials. We read over 100 articles, some scholarly articles in the press, and issued an 80-page report, Big Steps Before the Big One, How the Portland Area Can Bounce Back After a Major Earthquake. And that can be found at the City Club website for more information. We have 14 recommendations in the area of energy infrastructure, building safety and infrastructure, transportation, social resilience, and resilience planning. And one of them, as I just mentioned, had to do with seismic disclosure for single-family homes. We heard estimates in our testimony that there could be up to 100,000 homes in need of bolting to the foundation in the Portland metro area alone. And of course, as we just heard, every family that whose home is preserved is one less family in emergency shelter. It's one less family that's likely to leave the area. And therefore, by remaining, they can contribute to the social and economic recovery of an area after a major disaster. Ken Murphy, the former FEMA director of Region 10, who's famous for saying everything west of I-5 is going to be toast, testified to us that one way that people could remain untoasted was to, and one of the most cost-effective ways is to have their homes bolted to the foundation. We heard testimony from one of the one of the companies that does this kind of retrofitting, that that almost 80% of the homes that need this kind of bolting can be done for less than $6,000. My own 1909 Portland, Northeast Portland Craftsman House was bolted to the foundation for less than $3,000. Despite the fact that it's a relatively cost-effective and cheap measure, since 2000, at least on the record, there have been only about 1,300 homes that have done this kind of retrofitting. And so the City Club hopes that that incentives could be developed to improve that. And we feel that HB 2140 is a modest incentive that will encourage people to look at the benefits of this kind of retrofitting At a point in which relatively large sums of money are changing hands in terms of the cost of the house and the mortgage, and so it would be relatively affordable for people to do the retrofitting. So we feel that the disclosure itself has essentially no cost to the participants, but the benefits in terms of the information exchange to the buyers and actually also to the sellers is very important. So the City Club of Portland supports the passage of HB 2140. Thanks for letting me testify.
Senator Beyer, members of the committee, for the record, Sean Cleave representing the Oregon Association of Realtors in support of House Bill 2140. I'd like to thank the City of Portland for coming to the association very early on in their development of this concept. Originally, I think the city had desires for probably a little bit more aggressive incentive for people to do the types of upgrades that we had spoke of. To Senator Riley's point, there is some definite concerns regarding expense for doing this type of upgrade, and there can be a wide variety of different types of expense. For way of background, the sell a property disclosure arrived in the Oregon State Statute in 2003, so it's not an artifact of the statute that's been there for a long time. The Association of Realtors decided at that time to make it part of the statute so that there was consistency across the state, and that's why you see such a long form and such a long bill. We do think that providing a disclosure such as tie downs is material to the specific property. At that time, any remediation would be a discussion between the purchaser and the seller, which we think is very appropriate. And with that, I will close my testimony and answer any questions you might have.
Thank you, Sean. Senator?
Was there any consideration of requiring this to be done when a house is sold? I know that most homes are sold at least every 5 to 7 years.
Yeah.
And it seems to me that would be a good and appropriate time to make sure that it's done.
Senator Beyer, Senator Moreau, I believe that the City of Portland's original discussion had included some mandates that it be done, but through additional conversations, they realized that a mandate as such, especially in the housing market as now, that we would be adding insult to injury. I think that this is a good first step towards that goal. I know that a lot of people in my cohort that are purchasing homes have discussed tie downs. It seems to be an issue that, well, it must have been 2 years ago when the Oregonian ran the article about the big one, and there were quite a bit of discussions about providing some mandates, but splitting the baby, at least providing some constructive knowledge about whether the property, if it's older than the time period provided by building codes, has been tied down or is not, or if the homeowner doesn't know, that's an option. And I think that the form of the question is absolutely appropriate given the history of that statute.
Okay.
More? Thank you, Sean.
Thank you.
That is all I have signed up to testify on this bill. Does anybody else wish to testify? Seeing none, we will close public hearing, open work session.
Mr. Chairman, I move House Bill 2148 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Thompson has moved House Bill 2140A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion on the motion. Seeing none, is there any opposition to the motion? Seeing none, House Bill 2140A moves to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation by unanimous consent. And who wants to carry? Senator Monroe will carry. We'll close on that. We'll open on 2189. Patrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2189 establishes that a cause of action arising out of real estate appraisal activity must be commenced before the applicable period of limitation of 5 years for the appraisal activity, whichever comes first. It provides exception for in cases of claims of fraud or misrepresentation and applies to causes of action arising on or after the measure's effective date. Mr. Chair, we do have a dash one amendment. The dash one amendment increases that time frame, which in the bill is 5 years. It increases it to 6 years. With the dash one amendment, the measure has a minimal fiscal impact and no revenue impact, which is essentially what the original bill had. This measure came over from the House on a vote of 55-4, Mr. Chair.
All righty. So I have a number of people who wish to testify. Sean, you want to? I think the dash ones are yours.
Yep.
Let's hear about those.
Mr. Chair, Chair Beyer, members of the committee, for the record, Sean Cleave representing the Oregon Association of Realtors. The dash ones are our amendments. The concept here, and we're supportive of House Bill 2189. The concept here regarding the statute of repose that would be placed in statute is just aligning through the dash sixes one of brokers' record retention policies. ORS 696-280 requires brokers to hold retention for 6 years. The statute of repose presented in House Bill 2189 is a 5-year period. I don't like to bring hypotheticals to this body, but I'm going to argue a hypothetical. If there is an opportunity that arises through a transaction where attorneys are involved, hypothetically, between the two different record-keeping periods, there might be an additional exposure that's provided between year 5 and year 6 for realtors. We've worked with the Appraisal Institute and Ms. Butterfield and arrived at 2189 as an amendment we could all live with, and I would support House Bill 2189 with those amendments.
Any questions with Sean? Guess not. Thank you.
Thank you.
We have a number of other people who wish to testify. Owen Bartels, John, excuse me, Donnerberg?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Owen Bartels. I am a certified general real estate appraiser in the state of Oregon, and I'm also the president of the Greater Oregon Chapter of the Appraisal Institute. We're the largest professional organization for real estate appraisers in the state, and our national organization is the largest organization for appraisers in the country. Just a short history lesson. I promise I'll be brief with this. We recognize that there is currently an imbalance of supply and demand for real estate appraisal activity in this state. It's led to increasing costs and, I think more problematically, longer duration for delivery of those appraisal reports. It really does stem back to issues around the recession. During the recession, real estate appraisal is largely a transaction-based industry, and during the recession, there were a number of appraisers who left the field. After this recession, as volume of transactions has increased, we, because of the timeline associated with training new appraisers, have had a difficult time bringing new appraisers back into the field sufficiently quickly to meet this demand. We are taking steps to pursue a greater number of appraisers to help remedy this imbalance of supply and demand. One of the things that we did was last year I took an informal survey amongst our membership of barriers to entry into the field and ways that we might be able to retain appraisers in the field for a longer period of time. And the issue arose of the liability associated with appraisal work. There is currently no limitation on liability for real estate appraisal activity at all. We do, however, have a 5-year federal record-keeping rule that requires we retain our appraisal files from five years after the delivery of the appraisal or 2 years after the close of litigation, whichever is longer. So in creating this statute, we hope to marry our liability up to that 5-year record-keeping rule. As you've heard, the realtors have offered an amendment to make that 6 years in keeping with their record-keeping rule, and we're fine with it. Thank you very much.
You're fine with the 6 years?
We are.
Okay.
We prefer 5. Mr. Chair, for the record, my name is John Donnerberg. I'm the 2017 past president of the Oregon chapter of the Appraisal Institute. We are here in support of the House bill. I have a small family appraisal firm. We focus on complex litigation assignments, and it's been a significant concern throughout my career, the liability exposure that we have for an infinite period of time. So and another area, record keeping is important in support of potential state investigations, and so we're held to a standard of 5 years, and we would like to see our liability mitigated down to a five-year period, or six in this case, as we've agreed to amend to. So thank you for your consideration and appreciate your time.
Okay. Any questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And I have three other people, and it would be, looks like Brian Meredith, Catherine Vance, and Brian Granville? Granville? Apologize if I mispronounce your name. Whoever wants to go first?
I'll go first. Just to get out of the way. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Brian Glanville. I'm a past state president and national president of the Appraisal Institute, which we've already heard about. I've been valuing properties in the state for well over 40 years. When ORS 674 was written, it was put forward to mirror the mandates of Congress regarding lending. And I represented the Appraisal Institute, working with realtors and the bankers in writing the rules, and we tried to make them very similar to the federal regulations. And this limitation of 6 years meets what we originally put into our state law. And so I speak in favor of the motion.
So you're okay with 6 years? Okay.
Chair Beyer and the rest of the committee, thank you so much for the opportunity to speak today. My name is Catherine Banz, and I'm a commercial real estate appraiser here in Oregon. I have a small business with 13 employees, and I just wanted to come here and ask for your support in House Bill 2189. And just to say that a lawsuit, or the threat of a lawsuit even, can be devastating to a sole practitioner or to a small business such as mine. Not only just in the loss of time and money, it could also lead to a loss of clients. Many of our clients require that we disclose any form of alleged appraisal defect or complaint, whether the complaint was proven to be merited or without merit. And if we are required to make that disclosure, it can result in the loss of clients. I'll leave it at that, but I guess that's it. Thank you very much.
And 6 years?
I'm fine with that.
Not really. Okay, we see a trend.
Begrudgingly.
Chair Beyer, members of the committee, my name is Brian Meredith. I'm a certified residential appraiser. I'm a member of the Oregon Association of Realtors. And I'm a taxpayer. How's that? I'm here to speak in favor of House Bill 2189, but without the Dash 1 amendment, I'm not in favor of 6 years. The legislature's wisdom, they majority voted to alter the six-year record-keeping rule for appraisals down to 5 years. And this is because the federal guidelines that regulate our record retention is 5 years. It makes no sense to be mismatched 5 years and 6 years. If we have a statute of repose at 6 years, and an appraiser is only required to keep his records for 5 years, if those records are destroyed, like many appraisers do, they have no way to defend themselves in that sixth year. The Appraisal Institute has spoken here. They represent about 30%, less than 30% of the appraisers in the state of Oregon. As a national group, they represent less than 25% of appraisers. I do not believe that they're representing my interest in this particular case, even though I do thank them and applaud them for authoring 2189. And I don't think the Oregon Association of Realtors is representing my position here either.
So let me be clear. Are you opposing 2189?
I am for 2189. I am opposing the Dash 6 Amendment.
Okay. Senator Riley.
So the federal regulation for 5 years record keeping is a minimum, not a maximum. Is that correct?
It changes it. That is correct.
So you could keep them for 6 years?
I could.
6 years. Okay. Because one of the five appraisers favored it. Is that what you want
to do? Anybody else? Don't see anybody else. Thank you very much. That's all I had signed up. Does anybody else wish to testify? You're here. No?
Okay.
Ah, come on down.
Okay, that was a lot of eyes on me.
You're welcome.
Good afternoon. My name is Diane Forsberg, for the record. I'm a real estate appraiser, certified, and have my own business. I, too, am in favor of the actual bill. What I am not in favor of is the amendment. There doesn't seem to be a reason for the amendment because the realtors have 6 years for their file has nothing to do with the appraiser, nothing. There's no link, there's no overlap. The 5 years is our federal regulated time for our reports, and I believe and I feel that that is absolutely fair. The 6 year was a surprise. It was a surprise. It went through the House of Representatives to hear, and then all of a sudden, here comes this amendment from a negotiation. It is not, in my opinion, or hearing from the unaffiliated appraisers, this isn't a popular thing. 5 years is most popular, and hopefully we've sent enough emails along to say that. So that would be my opinion. I ask you to please pass the bill, but the amendment, please don't add that amendment to it.
Senator Riley.
Thank you. So currently, if I understand it right, there's no limitation. Is that on your liability? Is that correct?
Well, it depends on who you speak with. Well,
that's why I'm speaking to you.
Yeah. I was in a class where an attorney said that we did have something about 10 years. It was with the contractors and their tenure.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody can prove that.
I see.
So we just assume that there is none.
Thank you.
Senator?
Well, that poses the question, and this often happens in the legislature, but we're offering you 90% of the loaf, and you want 100% of the loaf by not having the dash ones. Don't you? I mean, if you had to, wouldn't you take 90% of the loaf?
If it passes, we'll be fine with it. But it just makes no sense. It makes no sense.
So how long do you keep your files now?
I keep my files for 5 years.
So and you religiously shred them after that?
You bet. Okay. Absolutely.
Any other questions? Seeing none, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Anybody else? Here we go. Come on down.
Good afternoon. My name is Galen Cooper, and I'm the administrator for the Appraiser Certification Licensure Board. And I'm sitting up here because I thought maybe I could answer some of your questions. So, right now, we have a statute and rule that says that an appraiser is to keep their files for 5 years. And actually, that is a USPAP requirement as well, Uniform Standards of Appraisal Practice. The part is that our agency right now, because we have no statute of limitation, the appraisal subcommittee from the feds, which is a federal agency, requires our agency to investigate all complaints that come in. So it could be a transaction that took place 10 years ago or 15 years ago. And in order to keep up with the federal standards, our agency has to investigate the complaint. We ask the appraiser for his file, and of course, chances are the appraiser has destroyed his file, but we have to continue on in the investigation. And unfortunately, the appraiser is at a disadvantage because he doesn't have a file to defend himself. By having this statute in place, then we would have to abide by that statute. So if you have it for 5 years, we'd abide by that. And so therefore, if we get an investigation in, unless it is in regards to fraud, we would have to investigate, or we wouldn't have to investigate because of that statute limitation that's put into the statute. But if the complaint is in regards to fraud or misrepresentation anyway, then of course we have the ability to investigate.
So I guess the issue, if I hear the realtors correctly, they say their statute is 6 years. And if there's a complaint and it's kind of got both parties, they would like to have them both have the same access, whoever's complaining, if you're investigating, or if there are.
But that's a separate agency.
Well, so. I get that. But the complaint from the consumer could be against both. Sort of a last man standing thing.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. All right. Anybody else? Lana.
Come back up and answer.
Just a second. Lana.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Lana Butterfield here for the Greater Oregon Chapter of the Appraisal Institute, which again is the largest of the appraiser institutions in the state. And we had a conversation with Sean Cleave, and I wanted to tell you that he looked for a bill that would allow him to move the realtor statute down to 5 years. And there was a realtor bill, but the proponents wouldn't let him amend it. So he asked us if we could amend our bill. And then in future, perhaps next session, we will amend it, both statutes down to 5 years. And we agree with that. We'd rather have 90% of now than nothing. So that's the history of this bill. There's also the matter of a certain senator being very angry with appraisers, and she has in her control our budget, the ACLB budget, and we're also cognizant of that. Thank you.
Okay.
I get it.
Mm-hmm. All righty. Anybody else?
I'd like to clarify.
All right.
Thank you.
My name is Dori Davis, for the record. I'm also a certified residential appraiser in the state of Oregon. Thank you, Chair Beyer and senators. The ACLB is a semi-independent agency, and while the budget may be under scrutiny from someone, it's still independent. We're a semi-independent agency, so that budget is not under anyone's control or investigation that I'm aware of. She said something about the budget, ACLB's budget. Did she not?
The agency's
budget.
The licensing agency.
The licensing agency.
Oh, the realtor's licensing agency, not the appraiser's licensing agency. Appraiser's licensing agency is a semi-independent agency, so their budget is completely semi-independent. They collect dues from appraisers.
The budget is under legislative purview and control.
Okay.
You're self-funded, but I think your budget is still subject to the legislative approval.
Legislative approval. Okay. Thank you.
Yep. That's right.
Sir.
Thank you, Chair Bear.
Let me come back. For the record, my name is Brian Meredith. You brought up a very good point, and one that I meant to touch on and didn't touch on, and that has to do with last man standing and litigation. The truth of the matter is, realtors are not the appraiser's client. The appraiser states in their appraisal report very clearly who their clients are and who the intended users of the appraisal report are. There is a published ruling from a court in California in 2014, and it made it very clear that the borrower did not have standing to sue the appraiser because the borrower was not an intended user of the appraisal report. The lender was named as the client and the intended user. So the last man standing thing really is not a good argument, because the borrower doesn't have standing to sue the appraiser, and neither does the realtor. Why would a realtor have a copy of an appraisal report? I don't know. Maybe someone gave it to him. But possession doesn't constitute use. It doesn't give them a client relationship with the appraiser. I think that it would be best if we pass 2189 as it was originally written, with the 5 years, that is consistent with the record keeping of the appraisers, and then we proceed to alter the Oregon realtor's record keeping rule down to 5 years.
Okay. Any questions? Thank you.
Thank you very much for letting
me. Alrighty. Last chance. Anybody else have anything to say on this? Okay, good discussion. So we'll close public hearing and open work session on 2189, and however you want to do it.
Well, I guess I'll move the dash one to House Bill 2189.
Okay. Senator Thompson has moved the dash one to 2189. Discussion on the motion. Senator Girard.
I think that was a good compromise then. Well, it'll all be uniform for this year or 2 years, and we have a short session next year, and you have, you know, you could come in and change both of these to 5 years. I agree with the people that are saying they want it at 5 years, and they want things consistent. I think this is just the way to go about doing that.
So is that a statement in support of the dash one?
Yes.
Okay. Anybody else? All right. We have a motion to approve the dash one amendments to House Bill 2189. Is there any opposition to that motion? There is none. The dash ones are adopted. Senator?
Mr. Chairman, I move House Bill 2189 with the dash one to the House, or to the floor, with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Thompson has moved House Bill 2189 as amended by the dash ones to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion on that motion. Is there any opposition to that motion? Seeing none, House Bill 2189 as amended by the dash ones moves to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. And Senator Girard, would you carry that?
Yep.
Okay, we've closed on that. We will open on House Bill 2359. Patrick.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Here we go. House Bill 2359 deletes the requirement that a beneficiary send to the Attorney General a copy of a notice sent to a homeowner informing them that they are not eligible for a foreclosure avoidance measure, or that the homeowner has not complied with terms of the foreclosure avoidance measure. This measure came to us with a House floor vote of 60-0. It has no amendments. There is no fiscal or revenue impact either, Mr. Chair.
All right. Well, let's hear from the Department of Justice. Cheryl?
I would want to be in her.
Good afternoon, Chair Beyer, members of the committee. My name is Cheryl Heemstra. I'm the Deputy Legislative Director at the Oregon Department of Justice. I'm here today on House Bill 2359. This is just a little cleanup bill. So if you'll travel back in time with me to about 2012, the foreclosure crisis is going on. We're changing a lot of the statutes on how foreclosures work. One of the issues that popped up was this sort of, it's called dual tracking is what we named it. But basically what would happen would be a lender would call a consumer and say, hey, hey, you know, I think we could work out something here. Let's try to do a mediation or a negotiation of some kind. So the consumer would think they'd be on that track. Meanwhile, the lender would file for foreclosure, and then the consumer would be very confused about what was going on. So what the change we made in the law back then said, let's send at least send a notice out to the consumer 10 days after the lenders decided to reject the idea of the mediation or negotiation of some kind, and send that notification out to the consumer so then they know what track they're on. When writing that little piece, there was also a requirement to put a notice, copy of that notice, to the Attorney General. Frankly, we're not looking, of course, to change the notice to the consumer. That's going to stay put. What we're just taking out is the letter, the copy of that letter that goes to the Attorney General, just taking that requirement out. Frankly, they've been going into a box, and then we've got to deal with them. And so just a little cleanup bill. This doesn't change anything with the foreclosure avoidance mediation program. We checked in with consumer advocates to make sure we weren't stepping on any toes here, and that wasn't the case. You know, if we do see evidence of the dual tracking problem, you know, crop up again, we're able to use our investigative tools and get copies of the notice and all that kind of thing. So it's really just a cleanup bill to be, you know, good stewards of our resources and save some folks some time. So happy to answer questions.
Questions?
I just got one.
Senator?
So after that law was passed and they had to send the notice out to the consumer, how many of those did you get?
How many of the notices?
Well, the law that we passed the last time that said they had to send a letter to the consumer and a letter to you. How many of those did you get?
Chair Beyer, Senator Thompson, I'm not sure. I can look it up for you, but, you know, hundreds and hundreds, yeah, thousands probably.
Follow. Mm-hmm. Then what did you do with them?
Chair Beyer, Senator Thompson, somebody had to, you know, mark them in as they are a public record, and we filed them and kept them. Yeah.
Anything else? No. Thanks, Cheryl.
Thank you.
That's all I had signed up. Does anybody else wish to testify on this bill? Seeing none, we will close the public hearing and open a work session on House Bill 2359.
Mr. Chairman, I move House Bill 2359 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
The Senator Thompson has moved House Bill 2359 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion. Senator Riley?
No. I was just going to volunteer to carry it.
No? Don't see any discussion. Is there any opposition to the motion? There is none. House Bill 2359 moves to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Carrier.
Senator Riley,
you got it. Senator Riley will carry. Okay, we'll close on that, and we'll open on House Bill 2855.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2855 creates a process for the purchaser of real property to obtain the deed of conveyance without taking legal action when the contract has been fulfilled. This measure comes to us with no amendments. It has minimal fiscal impact, no revenue impact, and the House floor vote on this measure was 58-0, Mr. Chair.
All right. Here we go.
Representative Goldberg is not going to come to the White House.
Good afternoon.
Yes.
Chair Beyer, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Tess Milio, here today on behalf of the Oregon Land Title Association in support of House Bill 2855A. The Oregon Land Title Association represents all the escrow and title companies in Oregon. And this is a bill that came about because in certain land sale contracts, which is where the buyer and the seller are engaging in a direct contract, the buyer was paying off to the seller and finally would fulfill their contract. And in some cases, for whatever reason, the deed wasn't being transferred from the seller to the buyer. And so the only way, you know, after years, we would see people come forward and want their deed, and they would have to go into a judicial, they'd have to sue in order to get the deed. So this is a way that we're setting up a non-judicial procedure for collecting the deed and transferring the deed in these certain select cases. And I'm going to let Cleve Abbey talk more about the bill. He has over 20
years in the industry and works for the Lawyers Title of Oregon.
Welcome.
Good afternoon, Chair Beyer and Senators.
Could you put your name on the record, please?
Oh, my name is Cleveland Abbey with Lawyers Title of Oregon, and I'm Chair of the Legislative Committee of the Oregon Land Title Association. In our business, we occasionally see the circumstances that Tess just described come up, where these are contracts that are payable over an extended period, so it could be a 15 or 20 or 25-year contract. And when the buyers pay it off, then the seller is supposed to convey legal title over to the buyer. What sometimes happens is by the time the contract is paid, the parties have forgotten that they really need to get a deed. Once the contract is paid off, if more years go by with no deed, then you can have a situation where the sellers may have passed away and now the title looks like it's in the heirs. When the buyers go to resell the property or refinance it, they discover this missing deed. So what the bill does is it provides a procedure for clearing the title. It requires a fairly elaborate system of notice so that the buyer is doing its due diligence to find out who is in the seller's shoes if it's not the original seller. And then there's even the notices go out, give the seller's side an opportunity to object. But if there's no objection, then it actually goes to a publication process. So by the end, if there's anybody who challenges the buyer's right to a deed, they're going to come forward. Or if nobody makes an objection, then the buyer's in a position to finally record a declaration which explains the procedure that they've gone through, and that's deemed to have the effect of a fulfillment deed. So that's the overall process, and we do find this coming up intermittently in our practice, and it really does provide a practical solution to a problem that causes a lot of anxiety when it does arise.
I see that. Questions? Senator Monroe?
Yeah, this actually happened to me. co-signer on my sister has mental health problems, and I co-signed for her house, and we paid it off. I paid it off, and we never did hear from the seller, the original seller, and then found out the original seller had died and the heirs, and it is a problem that needs to be dealt with.
Okay. Anything else? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That's all I have signed up to testify on 2855. Is there anybody else wishes to testify? Seeing none, we will close public hearing and open a work session on House Bill 2855.
Mr. Chair, I move 2855 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Thompson has moved House Bill 2855 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion on the motion. Is there any opposition to the motion? There is none. House Bill 2855 moves to the to the Senate floor with the due pass recommendation. Senator Merle, you want to carry this one?
Why not?
He will. Okay, we'll close on that. We will open on HJM 3A. Patrick.
Yes, Mr. Chair. House Chair Memorial 3A urges Congress to support changes to minimum appraiser qualifications criteria that are proposed by the Appraiser Qualifications Board and the Appraisal Foundation. This measure came over on a House vote of 55-3. There is no amendment. There is no fiscal impact, no revenue impact, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Sean, I think you're signed up on this one. You're the only one.
Chair Beyer, members of the committee, again, Sean Cleave representing the Oregon Association of Realtors. I think this is a record for me in your committee. House Joint Memorial 3 came to you through a conversation I had with a variety of legislators during the interim. legislators had contacted my office with concerns they were hearing from constituents regarding fees they were paying for, especially more proportionately rural appraisals, as was attested to from Mr. Bartels from the Appraisal Institute. There has been a reduction of appraisers over the last couple of years, although this recent year there was an uptick in the number of tests being conducted, so hopefully more appraisals coming on board. Through the research that I conducted at the request of Representative Gomberg, we found that in Oregon, there's just not a lot we can do regarding changing the qualifications. These are all federal standards. But just for the record, within the language of the bill, line 10, page 1, the Appraisal Institute reported in 2016 more than 62% of appraisers were 51 years of age or older, 24% were between 36 and 50, and only 13% were 35 years or younger. I think what you're seeing is a confluence of a variety of events. The crash that we had in the housing market in 2008, some federal standards with the intention of raising the bar, if you will, for the qualifications for appraisers has, in combination, led to fewer appraisers in the market. And what we have seen is the supply-demand curve change, whereas my wife and I, who bought our second home in 2008, paid a little under $500 for an appraisal. I believe, anecdotally anyways, what I had heard from a variety of my members, some had had appraisals as much as $3,200. Obviously, that's an outlier, but that was the intent of the joint memorial, was that this body would send a message to Congress asking them to engage in the issue. Obviously, it is what it is as a memorial. You know, it's non-binding, but it's probably the best we can do. I do have regular meetings with members of our congressional delegation. We've touched on this issue multiple times, both upon me bringing up the topic and from their staff bringing up the topic, too. I think constituents have contacted our congressional delegation to make them aware of it. My understanding is that the appraisal board at the federal level is taking action. This is the language in this memorial is very consistent with a testimony and letter that was submitted from our national president regarding the issue. And I'd like to thank Ms. Butterfield for working with me to clean up some of the language to provide a more clear direction in the action asking to be taken in the therefore section of the bill. And with that, I will take any questions you might have.
Senator?
Oh, thank you, Chair. The question I have, do you have suggestions as to what the standard should be? Because on line 7 of page 2, you know, you talked about the 2,500 hours of experience or 3,000 hours of experience. What are you suggesting they be? Those do seem a bit steep.
Yeah, so it's been a while since I've looked at the standards, but the Appraisal Institute does provide a very in-depth document that provides the history of those standards. Two standards in particular had been increased over the past 15 years, and forgive me, I don't have that information, but I will provide those dates in to OLIS. Specifically for general residential appraisers, we went from a two-year associate's degree to a four-year degree. I believe that went into effect 2013, but I will clarify for you, Senator. And then prior to that, we went from 2,000 hours to 3,000 hours. The language in page 2, be it resolved, starting on line 16 through 26, specifically asks for some modifications, lowering those thresholds, but also to do some short-term changes to provide a stopgap to some of the limitations and encourage more people to go into the field. I think think, you know, coming from somebody who has young brothers that are just finishing up their education now, it would be hard for somebody to encourage them to go the appraisal route when you'd need a four-year degree, 3,000 hours of apprenticeship. It seems just a little bit of a barrier given some of the compensation. Now, we also had another piece of legislation in the House that was aimed at some disclosure of what a normal and customary fee might be to pay for appraisals, and quite understandingly so, that was met with some resistance. But I think this memorial, albeit a memorial, is a step in the right direction.
Senator Riley?
So my only question is, are you sure you want the Oregon legislature to ask Congress to do something?
I will be happy to go back and lobby on your behalf. For the Riley.
Anybody else?
Thanks, Sean.
Thank you.
Does anybody else wish to testify on this bill? Okay, we'll close the public hearing and we'll open a work session on House Bill or House Joint Memorial 3A. Yet another letter to Congress.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, I move HJM 3A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Thompson has moved House HJM 3A to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion. Senator.
Well, like all these agencies that we have licensing, you're trying to hit the sweet spot. And the sweet spot is you want to protect the public and you want high qualified individuals. Uh-huh. And yet at the same time, you got to provide enough for, to meet demand. So hopefully by sending this back to Congress, they'll check both ends of that equation because it isn't just one-sided.
Yeah, Mr. Chair. Sorry, Mr. Chair.
Excuse me.
Clarification. This being a memorial, this would be a be adopted recommendation.
Will be adopted.
Not that there
correct.
Is a big difference, but just to make sure that Secretary of Senate, if she's
Scribner
listening,
change.
Isn't going to come down.
Didn't I say
be
that?
Be adopted.
Yeah, I think he said that, actually. I may have been mistaken.
I misspoke.
I probably didn't say that. So be adopted.
All right. So we have a motion on the floor. Is there any further discussion? Is there any opposition? All right. HJM 3A is moved to the Senate floor with a be adopted recommendation. Someone want to carry that?
Oh, I'll carry it.
Oh, Gerard will take it. We're closed
That's
on that, and
choice.
I think that takes us to the end of the day, correct?
Six for six, Mr. Chair.
Yes. We are adjourned.